Hello, 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 and welcome to the Big Web Show, Everything Web That Matters. I am your host, Jeffrey Zeldner, and with me today is the very elegant, the very magnificent, the multi-talented artist, musician, writer, coder, designer. Did I say artist? Space helmet wearing, atomic design inventing, Mr. Brad Frost. Hello, Brad.
Hello, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. Have we done this before? Have I had you on once before?
No, we've never
That's
done
crazy.
It.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
I'm excited. I'm very excited.
I'm excited too. But we've been like crossing paths and doing things together for like 10 years or something.
I wish. If you want to count me reading your book 10 years ago.
Okay. No, when did you start? When I first became aware of you is when you were basically, you were working at RGA in New York.
Yep.
And you were the voice of RGA on the web, as far as I could tell. I was going like, because I will admit that I used to, even though RGA is much, much huger and much more successful than anything I've ever been involved with, I used to think, well, my studio really gets the web, and these RGA guys, they're okay for winning Oscars for their titles, their animations, but they don't really get the web. And then all of a sudden, you. And I was like, this is intriguing. But it was all you.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, they have some really talented good people there.
I know that. What I mean is, in terms of, let me rephrase that. Yeah, they have incredibly talented people there, obviously, and have had for decades. But writing about the web in a modern, standards-oriented, accessibility-oriented, progressive enhancement-oriented framework, frame of mind, that seemed to be a new thing coming from them. And it wasn't just echoing what other people were saying. You were inventing, you were forging ahead. And I thought, wow, that's really amazing. RGA is amazing. And then I found out that, let's say, their chief blogger at that time was you. How much, when you were first doing that, how much were you doing actual project work and how much were you writing and speaking?
Well, Yeah. So, I mean, it all came into, I backed into it. So again, you know, I read your book and sort of started my career off in that direction. And then I had a job in Soho, at sort of a small fashion e-commerce company. I worked there for a couple of years and just burnt myself out a bunch of times, just grinding way, way too hard, working lots of weekends, lots of nights and stuff. And so after a while of that, I was like, man, I need a new job. And my wife actually, she worked at RGA.
Minnie Frost. Like,
yeah, Minnie Frost, Melissa. So, so she was there and I was saying, you know, I need to find a job. Hey, Melissa, do you know if they have anything open? So they put me in touch, or she put me in touch with some people, and I went up for an interview.
Was she in advertising at the time, in the web at the time?
So she's crazy in her own respect. She's a force of nature. But like she, at the time, she sort of started out as sort of an assistant, worked her way up through as a visual designer, and she actually did remember the Nike Fuel Band?
Sure.
Yeah. So she designed the apps for that. So that was sort of big news.
Oh my gosh.
Sort of stuff for her. Yeah. And now she's
and that was at RGA?
That was at RGA, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so she was already at RGA.
Right. And so she was my in. And so I was like, do they have any job openings? And the only web position they had open was for a mobile web developer. And this is sort of like late 2009.
Sure.
So the iPhone was already out, but not a lot of people were, in the web world at least, were sort of, you know, paying much attention to it, I guess.
Initially people were like, I seem to remember going, oh, good, the web page will shrink to fit the phone. Or if it doesn't, I can tap and make the column bigger. I can just grab this column and read the column and I don't need to worry, you know.
Right.
And we were sort of like, almost like a primitive accessibility viewer.
Right. Like we can, yeah, but I mean, and this is still very much in the, is it sort of like the tail end of the WAP days, right, and still very much in the days of the MDOT days. Yeah. And so whenever I got there, I was basically like, okay, I guess I'll use this as my way into the company, and eventually I'll get to make real websites. And of course, wow. I was there for, you know, a couple weeks, and then I was just like, oh my God, this is where everything is going. And then next thing you know is, I was like, hey Brad, you know, we're working with Nike and Apple on this new thing that they're coming out with called the iPad. And we're going to make like a iPad optimized sort of website for this new device that they're coming out with. So it was awesome to be at that. It was just total right place, right time sort of thing. But having that sort of standards based background helped me sort of thwart a lot of, I mean, you probably throw up if you saw some of the code of, you know, just a bunch of BR tags.
I've seen that stuff. No, I still see that stuff. Yeah, sure.
But like mobile specific, I mean, you know, we're talking like BlackBerry 4.2 and stuff like that. So okay. this stuff couldn't even.
So it's like email. It's like HTML mail code.
Probably worse, I think. It was. Really? I remember I was Jack Bishop, who was a really talented web developer. He was like the only other mobile web person there, and he was very much. He taught me everything about mobile. I was like, oh, cool. So this is like IE. He's like, yeah, this is like IE times 1,000.
Right.
Like IE6 times 1,000, I should say.
It's fascinating, though. One thing that you said, I just want to back up, and then we'll continue the story. I love the way, and I'm sure you heard the irony in it too when you said it. I love the way when you first got there and they told you you were going to be working on mobile, you said, oh, well, someday I'll get to work on real websites. Because that was the thinking back then, that mobile was this whatever, this pathetic thing on the side that nobody really used, except maybe for stock tips. And the real web was my ever larger screen and my ever faster home and office network.
Right. That's exactly it. Yeah. And then of course all the language that comes with it is you know, mobile users won't do that on, you know, on their phone or whatever. And it was really fun over the course of, and sort of back to answering your original question was, you know, were you doing client projects and stuff? And the answer was yes, for clients like Nike and Tiffany and company. One of my favorites was Tiffany's website. So I worked on their MDOT site. And so this is still pre, you know, responsive design and stuff, right. But just making a mobile optimized site, and people are like, you know, oh, who would buy an engagement ring from their phone? That's ludicrous. And of course, you know, I worked on this site, and I think after they launched it, their conversion rates on mobile jumped something like 200% or whatever. And it's like, there you go. You know, proof's people, in the pudding. It's
people
like,
buy,
you know,
cars on it. Why not?
Exactly.
I bought my daughter her computer on it.
There we go.
Yeah. Wow. So I remember around that same time seeing Tiffany's first app. It was very beautiful. I don't remember what the context was. I don't know if we were pitching, maybe doing a project, or I don't know. Somehow I'd met someone from Tiffany and they were showing me, and it was really beautiful stuff. It was really beautiful work. It's interesting because you come across as a very self-assured designer developer, not just, you know, belief in your ideas, which is great, but you don't seem particularly intimidated dealing with Nike and Apple and Tiffany and companies like that. And I gather part of the reason is you got to RGA, where that's the clients they have. They have the biggest clients on earth, and they threw you into the deep end. They were like, okay, here's our other mobile guy. All right, go. Like, they're not going to bring you Joe's Pizzeria. They're not going to bring you a local business that needs a mobile website. They're going to bring you a major client. And because you were able to present to them, I imagine today in your freelance business, you and you're, well, we'll get into all that, but I would imagine it gave you a comfort. You quickly developed a comfort level for talking to people, you know, 30 years older than you who make 10 times as much money as you. And but it's okay. You didn't feel like you had to. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And it's actually funny because my experience versus my wife's experience at the same company, because she came up sort of, you had to very much work her way up the ladder, sort of starting off, you know, booking people's travel and, you know, wrangling coffee and stuff like that. And then, you know, working her way up to working on these giant, you know, sort of apps and stuff. But she, I would come out of these meetings and she's, do you know who you were just talking to? And then she, that's the VP of blah, 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 or whatever. I'm like, so they were a jerk, or yeah. I had to tell them they were just fundamentally wrong about things. But I guess that is translates to, but not in an arrogant way, but no. I just, at these companies and, you know, people are people, you know, and I think that putting that sort of hierarchy and stuff aside and power structures, I get really, I'm sure you get this all the time where people are like, oh, well, you know, this is Jeffrey Zeldman. And so, you know, I would say something similar, but I don't have a platform, or I'm not internet famous, or I'm not whatever. People put a lot of salt into sort of what your pedigree is.
I would say that you're very internet famous, but
but it's weird though, like, because that's not what it's about, you know.
No,
like,
not at all.
It's about ideas, and it's about doing good work, and I don't really care if it's you know, summer intern number 3 that's coming up with really good design ideas or development ideas, or if it's the CEO of the company.
That's very important. That's very important that you say that, because nobody here listening should go, well, of course those guys can talk to their clients that way, but I can't, because it's not true. Because there you were, like, with like corn husks still in your overalls, right? Oh, so this is the big city, RGA, you know, and there you were. I mean, you were pretty young, fresh, raw. And here's why I think it worked, because I think this is really important. The way that you're very enthusiastic and very passionate about what you do, and it's about ideas, and it's fun, and it's infectious. I think what doesn't work is if people are arrogant and look down on the people they're talking to and think, well, this fool doesn't know Ariel from Helvetica, right? That's not going to work.
Yeah,
they smell that, and you have no right to be arrogant. Nobody has a right to be arrogant. But if you come across like, yeah, we thought about that, but you know what's even better? The way you are, and I'm doing a very bad Brad Frost. That was my Brad Frost, by the way. But but I think that having a warm, friendly personality that's just very enthusiastic about ideas, it doesn't come across as pushback for its own sake. It doesn't come across as arrogance or anything like it. It comes across as, we together want the best project, don't we? And we can do it. And this is exciting. Right. And I think that really, and you're much better at that than I am, because I do get sort of, I tend to get demoralized after a little while.
I start off, I do like a lot of client workshops and workshops at conferences, including yours. So thank you. But like, I typically start off and I sort of show a little bit of a slide that shows sort of what clients I've worked with in the past. And I pull it up and I say, like, this isn't to brag or sort of be like, oh, this is why I'm up here, although it's probably a little of that. But I mostly bring it up because I'm like, these people, all these big names, these household names and stuff that you know, I know, nobody knows what they're doing. Like, nobody, right. You know, you think that these companies, oh, you have a couple $1 billion to throw around and sort of figure this stuff. It's like, no, we're all feeling our way around in the dark. And for me, there's a strange comfort in that, that, you know, we're all figuring this out together. It's a puzzle that's just ongoing, and we're trying to make sense of it. We're, you know, we're getting to the sky pieces and they're all the same. And then somebody comes and dumps a bunch of new puzzle pieces onto the pile. And, you know, it's just, it's hard. And so
it is a new field. So there's that.
That's exactly.
They sort of encourage it. But I also think even in, like, brain surgery is an established field, not to compare web design and brain surgery, but although these days, let me, but there are probably speaking in gross generalizations, there's probably two kinds of brain surgeons. There's the kind that goes by the book, knows everything, every operation that's been done, and is really expert at delivering like very safe, predictable results. And that's the person who's going to do your routine brain surgery, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's the person who's out on the cutting edge who doesn't know what the hell they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're doing something nobody's tried. They're doing, and the patient may die, but they're also the only person that could sit, like, conventional mm-hmm. brain surgery isn't going to save the life of this patient. This is terminal. But this experimental technique, 60% chance it's going to kill them, 40% chance they live and science advances and we learn something. And I think our field is like that too. Again, not to aggrandize web design, because we're not doing brain surgery, we're not saving people's lives. You know, we're hopefully creating better experiences. It's not the same thing. But there are people that you hire because they're very competent and they're very capable. And then there's people that you hire where you're not I think, like, I would hire you because I'm not exactly sure where I want this to go. And I think you'll experiment. There's other people, one of your collaborators, Dan Mall, is another person I think, mm-hmm. we're not really sure where we want this to go. And we're looking for someone to maybe invent something brilliant. And we know that's a little risky, but that's cool. Does that make sense? Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I think that makes perfect sense. One of the analogies that I keep thinking of is that I use quite a bit when talking about the web is I'm first and foremost, I consider myself a musician. And what I think I'm attracted to web design so much is that it's sort of simultaneously in art and the science. The same way that yes. you sort of see people that are, you know, in a symphony and they just have this amazing sense of discipline and structure and can read the music perfectly. You know, that there are those sort of in the weeds, those predictable, like those brain surgeons that can, you know, just crank things out. And it's all very, very structured. And some people, their personalities like gravitate towards that structure. But then in the same field, there's, you know, the Bob Dylans of the world, or these, you know, improvisers, sort of jazz musicians, or anybody that is,
or Brian Eno or Dr. Dre making stuff up in the studio.
Exactly. And it's this beautiful sort of blend of right brain, left brain and stuff. And I always think about that often because my mom's an art teacher and my dad's an accountant, and I feel like web design is like a perfect blend of exactly that right there.
And if you're bad at accounting, it bites you, especially nowadays, right? As much as anything else,
right? But I think that
I don't mean financially. I mean if you're bad at the mathematics of it, because it's become so complicated.
Well, yeah. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, like so I think that there are people, there are reliable people in the field that you could trust to you know, be a good set of hands and sort of, you know, bring a project to life and just really count on that person or those people to sort of operate within constraints, and they probably enjoy those constraints. They like predictability, but then there's people.
Ooh, I like the constraints.
But then there's other people on the other end of the spectrum that are a little more freewheeling, where not everything needs to fit perfectly in an Excel spreadsheet or a Gantt chart or something. And that, you know, people like Dan Mall and Josh Clark that I get to have the good fortune of working with regularly. It is a bit of jazz improv sort of thing where, you know, we can sort of hop around and we can sort of, you know, get a feel for the environment. It's not, we laid out this project plan, or, you know, we talked to the client and we laid out our, you know, the scope of the work, and now we just need to follow it to a T. You know, in order to do good work, sometimes it requires that. And obviously there's constraints like time and budget.
And that is a place where you do need reputation. Just like, if I came into the studio and I'm the record company, and David Bowie's in the studio, high, making weird noises on his guitar for 3 weeks in Germany, it ends up being the album Low, a masterpiece. Right. But the actual process, he looks like he doesn't know what he's doing. And that was part of it. The experimentation and failure were part of it. But it was like, at that point, he'd already done two, let's say at least two classic rock albums, right?
Yeah.
So that if he wanted to experiment, and he'd actually done like 7 or 8 albums that were all amazing, so
yep.
people would let him do it. And I think that's true. If you want to be on the, if you want to really be experimental in your work,
yeah.
you've either got to do it on a personal project, or a project that you're donating your time toward, or you have to build a tremendous reputation. But
yeah.
if you do a lot of personal projects that are amazing, which again, this is something with, you've got, this is responsive, styleguides.io, Pattern Lab, WTF Mobile Web, I forget the rest, but you do tons of stuff and put it out there and get a rep, and then that affords you the luxury to say, we're not really sure yet, instead of saying, here's the wireframe, sign off on these 7 modules. You said 7, I'm not giving you 8. All right, I'll give you 8 because you're a really nice client, but no more. Like, but you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely, and I do think that there's a level of fundamentals that needs as a prerequisite, I guess, to all of that. Right. Picasso is another one that comes to mind where, yeah, before getting to cubism, there was, you know, all this stuff that was a lot more impressionistic.
His drawing was amazing when he was 12.
And, right. But it, just going through and like learning the fundamentals, learning the techniques right. and stuff. And then eventually, once you have your head around that, you could sort of take it a step further and go, ah, okay, like, you know, where is there left to go? And that's what leads you to sort of fun.
Like Miles, minimalism was a big contribution from Miles Davis and playing very mm-hmm. few notes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, he played bebop with Charlie Parker, which yep. is virtuoso playing, right?
Yep.
With amazing scales and just super fast inventions. So, yeah. Listen, speaking of super fast inventions, I've got to come up with a very bad segue to my first sponsor message, and nice. I think that was it. Braintree. This episode of the Big Web Show is brought to you by Braintree Payments. Why make powerful payment integration more difficult than it has to be? Braintree's powerful full-stack payment platform allows you to accept nearly any type of payment from any device with just one integration. It's flexible to your system's needs and supports most programming languages. So whether you're using Java, Ruby, or Python, you'll always have a range of server-side and client-side SDKs available. Braintree makes payments and your job a whole lot easier. Simple, secure payments. Code you can integrate quickly. Accept nearly any type of payment, from Apple Pay to Bitcoin to Venmo to credit cards or whatever types of payment the future holds. The Braintree code supports Android, iOS, and JavaScript clients. And SDKs in many languages, .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, Ruby. It's elegant code with clear documentation, and they're available to help you get started. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/BigWebShow. That's BraintreePayments.com/BigWebShow. Thank you, Braintree. And Brad, over to you.
That was great.
How do you?
Good job.
Thank you. I really like what they say. I find reading out loud difficult for some reason. I find it easier to improvise, but I can't really trust myself to do that in a situation like this. So in a situation where you're extolling the virtues of a sponsor, you don't want to improvise because who knows what craziness is going to come out of your mouth if you're me. So.
I'd be in the same position, I think, too.
It's fun. I think people like that about you, though. I have a question. Why StyleGuides.io and Pattern Lab? Why StyleGuides and Pattern Labs? One's a product and one's a bunch of document examples? What's going on there?
Oh, yeah. So styleguides.io is a project I work on with Anna Debenham, mm-hmm. but it's an open source project, so lots and lots of people contribute. But it was one of those things where after a while, wherever you see a few things get floated out there, you know, here's an example of this really cool pattern library, or here's a really good article about this topic, or here's a really cool, sort of tool that I'm using for creating pattern libraries or style guides or whatever, it was one of those things where I was just sort of tracking a lot of that stuff locally, you know, so I just had a link dump of a lot of this stuff. And, you know, one day on Twitter, Anna Debenham as well, we were sort of talking about it because she's written a lot about front end style guides, including a book of the same title of front end style guides. And so she had a bunch of links and stuff. And so we were saying, hey, how about we, you know, make a little resource site? And so she did all the design work for it, which was fantastic. It was sort of in the course of a weekend. It was here's the website, but just a little Jekyll site, and then basically threw it up there on GitHub. And so as more and more organizations start releasing their style guides out into the open, they're able to sort of throw it on the pile, and so the community has this giant pool of resources and
anyone can contribute.
And anyone could contribute. And that's what's really cool. And it's sort of in some weird way, it's a little bit of a badge of honor for, you know, the people that are working on these things. It's a nice, easy way, I think, to contribute, where it's like, you know, hey, we're doing this, you know, we put this out here, we're excited about it. And the community is excited to have a bigger pool of really great pattern libraries to you know, browse for inspiration. And of course, you know, the other sections of the site have to do with different articles and conference talks and books and all sorts of stuff.
And I love the navigation too. I love how the colors flow. It's so intuitive and playful, Anna, and fun. It's great. She did a great job.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's so that's sort of I guess I've had a penchant for helping create sort of resource sites. So, and that's where, you know, This Is Responsive sort of came from, that same sort of mindset, where it's, you know, a lot of people are talking about this. There's lots of stuff floating around out there. You know, can we make a sort of a hub for all of that information? And so.
Do people rip this stuff really off? Great. I don't mean use what you're putting out there, which would be cool. But, I mean, do you find people, like, copying this and putting it out as if they did it, like other agencies, maybe in other countries? You don't have that problem where people copy your stuff? That's great.
No, I don't think so. I, at least not to my knowledge. I mean, there's definitely stuff out there that, you know, takes on similar formats and stuff, and that's actually been really cool. With the This Is Responsive thing, I specifically remember there was a sort of a similar project that was specific to HTML email and responsive email, and they had sort of, you know, taken on like a similar, you know, sort of look and feel and structure to it, but it was different content altogether, which was awesome. Because just having a hub for all things responsive design or all things HTML emails or something, just like having here's a one pager of like, you know, 175 links categorized around sort of whatever different thing. Like, I think that's an awesome concept, and so it's really cool to see people sort of take that, you know, that sort of just link farm kind of structure and, you know, do that to other topics. Like, I would love to see that around different things, like, you know, JavaScript frameworks or whatever.
That's always been a big, the web makes it easy to disseminate information. And one of the best things you can do is curate what's out there, right? Yeah. If you don't have anything to write or say at the moment, you can grab not that you don't, but if someone's new to this, if you're evaluating, if you're finding 15 great articles on a particular topic and you're arranging them in some way, so, you know, maybe from beginner to advanced or whatever you're doing, it's a really great way to contribute. I remember Owen, wow, why am I blanking on his last name? This sucks. He made it was at the beginning of the CSS layout movement around 2001 to 2003, when we were all going like, okay, so a one column layout with a footer, if the color doesn't have to stretch, that'll work. And people were going like, how are we going to do like a two column layout with a masthead? That's just, and this guy, Owen, he made the layout reservoir. You know what? I don't think it's up it's still up. I bet a lot of people listening will remember this anyway. Layout reservoir. Yeah, it's not up. CSS Layout Reservoir, Blue Robot. Beautiful, Blue Robot.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And
that's ringing some bells.
And it looks like somebody bought that. No, it looks like somebody used the name CSS Layout Reservoir Blue Robot so that they would get that traffic on Google, and they put something else there instead. Here's the CSS Layout Reservoir, but, oh, yes. Anyway, unless maybe he works at this company now. That anyway, you know what? It's been a thing go as far back as I can remember. It's been a thing. Put what you know online and share it. Now, Pattern Lab is different, though. Pattern Lab is actually a free, yeah, an open source product, it looks like.
Yeah, yeah, correct. So Pattern Lab is a specific tool that helps people make
atomic design.
Make atomic design, and it's part like a prototyping tool. It's part style guide tool. But yeah, it's an open source project. There's a PHP version and a Node version, built by, Dave Olson and Brian Musenmeyer, respectively, and amongst other things. And it's basically, I sort of had this, you know, prototype of it, but I'm not really a backend developer. So I know enough, you know, PHP and stuff to be dangerous. And so that's, I started off with this mental model in my head, and I was like, cool, I need to be able to do this. And so I, you know, sort of built a shell of this I guess environment, this sort of, you know, area that I can define a bunch of modules and include them inside each other and then sort of swap out some data. And I got, you know, a basic thing off the ground, but then I hit the wall as far as my skill set goes. And so I pinged Dave Olson, who's a really brilliant web person. He's talked a lot about mobile, amongst many, many other things. And he's at West Virginia University is where he works. So he's a good friend of mine. And I said, you know, hey, you know, I'm working on this thing. I would like to, you know, be able to do X, Y, and Z. And he took it, and I think it was like 2 days, maybe 3 days. Good. And he comes back, he goes, oh yeah, I rewrote the entire thing, and now it does all the, it has all these like superpowers. So it's been cool. And then, yeah, it's just like evolved and grown from there, and a load of different people use it to create more modular user interfaces. So
you make your own community, and another great thing about doing a side project like this is you get to meet and work with amazing people. And then I just want to say also, you have probably the best demo of what atomic design is on this site. If you go to patternlab.io and scroll down a little bit, basically there's like I don't even have vocabulary for this thing, but starts with atoms, goes to molecules. There's like a little selector grid, a little selector rectangle, which as it moves, changes. You can actually see what you mean by atoms and then see what you mean by molecules, because like the different parts of a search interface, each part is an atom. And then they come together to make a molecule, which is a search bar, right? A little mm-hmm. It's just amazing.
I pinged in order to make that, I pinged my one of my best friends, Robertino Zambrano. We work together at RGA in New York, and this guy is just amazing. He's more like a motion graphics sort of animator. Yes. Kind of person. He's been like on the Oscar shortlist for like short films and stuff.
Wow.
He's insanely talented. I'm like, hey, could you make a little thing for my website?
But did you do the concept together, the animation concept together? Did you storyboard it together? Or
yeah,
did you tell him what you wanted and he figured it out, Robert?
Yeah, I had like a storyboard, and I sort of was doing like a crappier version of it in Keynote, and I'm like,
which
okay,
is fine.
I would like to do it. I would like to have like a more polished version, and Robertino delivered. He's a really fantastic.
Did he do this in CSS?
No, or no.
JavaScript?
This is all. I think probably After Effects or whatever sort of.
But motion graphics software. So is it a video?
It's just a video, a looping video.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah. It's not interactive. I just take it all back.
No, it's cool. It looks because of the simplicity of the design and the elements, I assumed these were just like little SVG icons and text, and I guess that would be very difficult.
It's definitely possible. It's just, you know, like, Val, as with any, could do it. It's time, effort, all of that.
Yeah.
Open source projects equals struggle to find a couple evenings or whatever once in a while to chip away at some of this stuff. So,
you know, it's great. I was in no way implying anything else by saying, oh, it's not a CSS animation.
All right. This conversation is over.
Storm Castle Frankenstein. I have to take a very, very quick sponsor break. I can't believe how fast our time is flying, at least to me, because I'm having so much fun listening to you and occasionally talking over you like the loudmouth that I am. But I have to talk now about Incapsula, and that's spelled, by the way, I, if you don't know, it's spelled I-N, like in, C-A-P-Cap-Sula, S-U-L-A, Incapsula. And now, as we all know, the web can be a dangerous place. Incapsula is a cloud service that makes your website faster and safer. They have a worldwide network that inspects every packet that comes and goes from a website, blocking attacks against your site while delivering your content to your customers faster. With a global network of 30 data centers and 2 terabits of bandwidth, Incapsula sits in between your servers and your customers, routing and filtering traffic. So attack traffic, like scraping bots, denial of service attacks, that kind of stuff never makes it to your servers. Meanwhile, your content is cached and connections are optimized using their CDN, so content is delivered lightning fast. Incapsula's custom software and servers, plus their 24/7 operations team, keep everything running. They protect and accelerate over 4 million websites every single day, from individual bloggers all the way up to Fortune 500 companies. And because Incapsula is a division of Imperva, an experienced security company, you know your site is in safe hands. Now, every day, websites of all sizes are attacked. Criminals use giant botnets to scrape website content, try to break into databases, and bring sites down with denial-of-service attacks. On the performance side, customers are impatient, and sites that take even 3 seconds to load can turn off potential customers. And if your site goes down or is unavailable, customers will go somewhere else. Incapsula solves all these problems. And Incapsula is offering a special deal to Big Web Show listeners. Just visit incapsula.com/bigwebshow and enter the code BIGWEBSHOW. You'll get 1 month free. That's 1 month free when you visit incapsula.com/bigwebshow and use the code BIGWEBSHOW. So do it. Okay, and we're back. I'm looking at Brad. He's wearing a helmet. What's the helmet was just... A lot of people know that the future-friendly folks are known by wearing helmets, and there's a story about that. And so, like, mostly when you see Brad, like, on his Twitter feed on his website, bradfrost.com, you see him wearing the space helmet and with kind of an early 1965 Beatle haircut. Right. What? By the way, you got a haircut today, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It is not in the direction of the latter Beatle years.
So Melissa will be upset then.
Yeah. She really wants me to grow my hair out longer.
She wants you to look like Dave Grohl.
Yeah. She.
You don't really look like Dave Grohl, though.
I don't look like Dave Grohl. I don't know why. I think that I really like Dave Grohl. But I'd say mostly as a person. He just seems like a really cool person. Mm-hmm. Musically, I mean, he's amazingly talented. But like, I don't like Foo Fighters. I wouldn't say it's like one of my favorite bands, but like, she knows that I think that Dave Grohl is just like a really cool guy, I guess. And so she's like, you could have long hair like Dave Grohl.
Oh, manipulation.
That's it. But yeah, I get to these like awkward stages where I look absolutely disheveled / page boy / 1970s whatever, and I just can't commit to letting it grow out another 2 months of looking terrible and awkward.
Okay. You know, Steven Spielberg can come on The Tonight Show wearing a backwards cap and a members-only jacket from the 80s and jeans, and no one's going to say, well, he's not acting like a professional. I mean, I think it can be part of your, I hate to say this, but your brand. It can be part of the image you cultivate for yourself, that you are kind of the slightly rough around the edges, you know, genius next door.
Very, very delicate way to put that. But yeah, I get it.
First time I met you, what did I say? I said, where's Scooby? Which delighted Mike Montero.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, I think his presence, I never say mean, weird stuff like that. It was just, I think I was trying to impress him when I said that. But like, I can be a bitch too, watch. But you do have that sort of, yeah, or like college haircut.
College haircut forever, I guess. I'm going to be like a 90-year-old guy.
They're not wearing it now. I just noticed all the young guys, man, their hair is like waxed, like butch waxed up, and it's very short on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like hip-hop meets punk. I can't explain it, but you've probably seen this.
Meets like rockabilly almost.
Yes, a little bit there. Yes. Like Elvis. There we go. Sort of. Like a DA. Yeah. Like a DA meets a Japanese thing. I don't. It's.
I can't do it. I know what you're talking about. I really can't do it.
I would look ridiculous. There's a certain level of hip. In fact, I just trimmed my beard. There's just a certain level of hipsterism that. And it's not that I'm a raging conformist, but it just. I just start to feel like, oh, man, I'm a middle-aged dad. Come on. I've got to stop.
My favorite was whenever I used to work in Soho, I would just get these looks that were just like, really?
But you were like 20 years ahead of the time.
I don't know. No.
Wait, so that was from like the pretentious people? That was from the people who – that was from the tourists who were visiting Soho?
No, not the tourists. All the sort of fashionista people that – live and work around Soho. You know, it's like you're walking into a movie set of some fashion related movie, just walking around down there. And I was just wearing some, you know, gross t-shirt and had my hair cut, and I would get these stanky looks from people.
Yeah. You and I think are accepting. If somebody really wants to dress up and look amazing, that's great. And like, we respect that. And if somebody wants to look like they just rolled out of bed and they're wearing gym clothes from 2 weeks ago, that's fine too. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about the ideas. It's about work. It's about all of that stuff. And RGA was another example of that. There's a lot of people. I mean, our CEO would wear the same. He had his brand. He wears black every day in a freaking beret. That's his jam. That's his thing. But then, you know, other people will, you know, and some people would follow suit with stuff like that and have their own thing going. And yeah, I like having the ability, and we're in a very broad field where some people are doing the 9-to-5 in a big office environment, so they have to do the whole business casual thing. Other people are at home in their sweatpants, you know, working remotely and everything in between. So I
wear my sweatpants to my studio. I'm crazy that way. In fact,
it's awesome.
The first time I met, we just finished our first, at Studios Zeldman, we just finished our first client project, and we rolled it out, and it's been very good.
But, congratulations.
Thank you. But the first time I met the client, he came for a meeting. I don't know what I was thinking. I put on my suit jacket and a dress shirt, and then I wore gym sweatpants.
That is awesome.
Because and sneakers, because I always wear sneakers, and I wasn't trying to make a statement, and it was really weird because I actually he's a great guy, but I and he would probably deny this, but like when our eyes met, he like smiled like, oh yes, that's Jeffrey, I recognize him. And then he looked like he seemed to like quickly take in my attire, and like he literally did the thing like in old movies when a woman looks at another woman and looks her up and down in this sort of snooty way. He wasn't being snooty, but he looked like, okay, that makes my, that like I see he's wearing a suit, that makes sense. Wait a minute, gym pants. Am I in a meeting with a mental patient? Like, right. I could see that he was sort of taken aback, and I get it, because I should take more care with my appearance. But
business in the top, party in the bottom. Yeah,
I got a head for business and a bod for sin. Yeah, maybe. I don't know what. I really wasn't trying to make a statement. I think I gained some weight in all the. You know when you have suits that were made for you? Like there's a guy in San Francisco who was making
no,
suits.
No, I know, Jeffrey.
Well, I didn't used to, but there's a guy, Al's Attire, in San Francisco, and for about what you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit, a little bit more, not much more, you could pick the material and design it with him, and so I was doing that for him. It was very cool. And I was awesome. At the time, I was working out, like weightlifting and eating very... I was pretty regimented. I was pretty disciplined, and just changed the word. I was disciplined, and then I stopped. Stuff happened in life, and I started like eating my feelings or whatever. And the next thing I know, that doesn't fit anymore. So I was like, "Well, the jacket still fits, and I'll wear the sweatpants." And like, I really didn't. But it is kind of crazy.
I'd say just own it and go with it. And yeah, that's the thing.
I should make that a look, but to really make that a look, like you have to. Have a cologne line, a line of clothing, and a record in contention for the Grammys. And then you can do whatever you want. Like, these are slippers. Like, yes, of course you're wearing slippers. These are $10,000 slippers. Of course they are. And worth every penny. Absolutely. I don't know. I'm glad we're in an unpretentious field. I think most our clients recognize that we're in a service business.
Right.
And it's not glamour.
Right.
I worked at ad agencies for a while, and there were some great ones that I worked at where I wasn't really good enough in a lot of them, but there were places where clothes were definitely, like, you had to look and dress a certain way to be taken seriously, and my immature mind rebelled, and I did the opposite, because I just couldn't bear it. The thought that it's not the person with the best art direction, it's the person who's... pants cost the most? No, that can't be.
Right, right.
So I think I'm in permanent rebellion.
I think that's safe to. That was a good hunch to have and sort of play it out, because I think as time goes on, it's who really cares about that stuff, I guess.
Well, who does care? You have another site called Death to. I'm gonna, because it's a family network. It's called Death to BS. But
it's the PG-13 version.
Yeah, that's the PG-13 version.
Yeah.
And it's really a message site.
Yeah.
About the kind of garbage that we put on our websites or don't have to. Right? The kind of stuff that we're asked to do every day as professionals. How do you handle it you work with great partners, you have great clients, but do you ever find yourself being asked to do something that you just, that's like a dark pattern, or put some spam in it, or make an unskippable ad? And does that ever happen? And if it does, how have you handled that?
Yeah, as much as I would love to say, I will take a bunch of things to the mat and, it's about principles and stuff like that. I mean, I think in this field you have to be pragmatic, but I think so much of the BS that we are exposed to as users of the internet, but also, in our own work, we're being asked to do this stuff. I don't think a lot of it is intentionally deceptive. Sometimes it is, and I'm certainly not going to say that it isn't. I think a lot of it's just cultural, and sort of back to what we were talking about earlier, talking about hierarchies and stuff, developers especially, because I'm a front-end developer by trade. And so I'm typically the last person in line, you know, in a waterfall process or whatever, that just gets shoved a bunch of things. That's just, hey, you know, CodeMonkey, you know, plug this in and just make it work. And, you know, we've already had all the meetings that talks about, you know, oh, this newsletter modal window is going to sit over here and whatever. And, you know, you're not consulted as the person that's just thought of as the person that's going to implement it. You know, it's I think so much of it has to do with cultural stuff. And those people that are having those meetings aren't the people that are in the know, that are listening to podcasts like this or going to, you know, good conferences and reading, you know, intelligent things about sort of the craft of web design.
Right.
These are people that are just very, you know, whether it's some KPI or metric or, oh, we need to increase our newsletter subscriber things. How do we do that?
And which is a tactical, I mean, people do that because subscriptions are falling off, or we're going to have to fire people, where our income's going down. I mean, they do it for a reason.
Right, exactly. And that's where, back to the pragmatism, I think it is really important to pick at that. You can't just be that arrogant person or that person that your principles will never waver and sort of dismiss what is often a very real need. You know, okay, well, we need to increase our subscriber base or increase our newsletter subscribers, or, you know, we want to get more people, funnel more people over to our Facebook page for this reason or the other, or whatever. I'm not saying that, you know, some of that stuff, it's like I could pick away at that and say, well, let's talk about that. Like, why is having 1,000 Facebook likes you know, valuable to you? Like, what are you planning on doing with that? And you know, if there are good answers to that stuff, then, like, by all means. But
which there usually aren't, because likes are meaningless.
Right. So what I find very fulfilling in my work is sort of taking that stuff, wherever people come at you with, we need a website. It's like, and then you talk to them, and then you're like, you don't need a website. You need a direct mail campaign or something,
right?
And apps are a perfect example of that. I mean, it was, you know, it's totally the when everything's a, or when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail or whatever, right? That the whole app store thing, we need an app, you know, that at RGA, we saw that all the time. It's like, need to make an app.
Right.
And it's like, well, why? And that, like, let's
so people
actually
can install it and never use it again.
Right. But so all these modal windows and tick boxes that are ticked by default, like, sign me up for all of your harebrained, or, you know.
No, I don't care.
Whatever.
I don't. What's Playboy's one? I don't like good sex. Right. Like, it was either subscribe to Playboy or no. I don't like good sex.
On Death2BS, except spelled out the full way, .com. Yes. What we did was, there's a toggle where by default it's just a very blank sort of very crude, almost like Craigslist, like no styles whatsoever aside from just some basic layout styles. And then there's a link that says turn the BS on.
I'm doing
and
so
as
now.
Soon as soon as you do that, you get a modal window that says, like us on Facebook.
If you think racism is bad, is the one I've got.
Right. And so the close button, rather than just saying close, like, get this modal out of my face. So, like, yeah, so many sites do that. Like, no thanks, I don't like good sex. Ours says, it's like us on Facebook if you think racism is bad. And then the close button says, no thanks, I'm a racist. Yeah. it's ludicrous. It's like, no thanks, I don't like having good deals and stuff like that. It's like, of course I like having good deals. Don't try to guilt me. It's just very, very, very strange, weird anti-patterns. But again, it's oftentimes not coming from this very sort of deceptive, sinister place. It's more just like a, we need to increase metrics X. Let's do this thing.
At some point, someone once, many years ago, said, they should know that their call is important to us. We're going to put them on hold, you say? They might be on for a minute. We should let them know that their call is important to us while they're waiting. Like, because at the time, the whole nobody had ever been on hold before, and hold was 60 seconds long or whatever. There was somebody sincere behind that, and now that's, you know, like right. I'll use the web over any. I'll never call if I can avoid it, like, because you always get these menu systems where they give you these false messages, and then they advertise their other products.
Yeah.
Right? You're like, you're calling Verizon to cancel. I shouldn't have said Verizon. Doesn't matter who. You're calling somebody, calling the cable company to just cancel. And instead you listen to 40 minutes of ads about the channels that you don't want. It's like, yeah. It seemed like a good idea to somebody. Well, we've got the consumer's ear. I mean, maybe that's the problem. I think it's Derek Meyer who said that the problem is that you're treating the people like they're consumers instead of like they're human beings.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly.
That's a big problem.
Yeah, and that's the impetus of the site, and it started off, you know, just sort of ranting. Actually, you were at that conference, so the very first time I talked about that, it was over in the Netherlands. We were over there together, and whenever I first talked about it on stage, just about all this bullcrap that we're exposed to, and as technology becomes a lot easier to create and produce, it's just we end up with this just absolute, you know, this sense of being overwhelmed and just having to separate the wheat from the chaff and all of that all the time. And well, hell, even just looking at, obviously, lots of talk now about, you know, fake news and the like. It's, you know, this is being played out in a very real way.
Yes.
And it's hard. Yeah. So it's like, how do we separate the noise from the signal?
And if you're a real news publisher, but you need money, and an outbrain type organization has links to fake news, like, oh, you're reading about this? Well, you should probably read about this child kidnapping ring at a pizza place, like,
right? Yeah, no, it's really lousy, and there have been some good articles on the topic that I try to round them up. It's been a little neglected lately, but there's a blog part to it, I guess. But yeah, it's really challenging because if you're some like Pulitzer Prize, you know, award-winning journalist, and you see your work published, and as soon as you get to the end, to like the punchline of the whole thing or whatever, you know, and then you see child stars, where are they now, or some just disgusting like
more toenail, after the jump,
toenail fungus or whatever. It's like, you just have to cringe, right? I mean,
I used to write about web standards for Adobe, and then they would put my articles up in Flash.
Oh, nice.
And I would be like, and people would say, the people who knew what I was talking about would say, oh, the irony. And I'd say, yes, but should I not be trying to reach these people? Like, this is the forum I've got. So there's that side to it, too.
Yeah, no, there totally is. And but I think BuzzFeed is a great example. It's like, if 150, you know, a listicle of 150 cute kittens or something posing with Nicolas Cage provides the revenue for good investigative journalism or something, then it's like, what's the foul in that? It's a delicate balance, though. I think it's well above my pay grade, but I do think that, like, as any web designer, any person sort of working in this field that's just sort of blindly asked to, like, hey, shove this thing on the page, or hey, do this, I think it's very much our responsibility to ask why, and to sort of push back, and, you know, like an incessant 3-year-old just go, why, you know, why do we need this? Why do we need this extra button? Why do we need this modal? Why do we need this thing ticked by default? Why do we need all of this? And just really get to the crux of it, and then maybe try to solve it in a more respectful way. And that's a lot of times, that's my frustration with a lot of front end people. The people at the end of the line is that they just sort of like, I just hear this pushback on a lot of things, whether it's adopting design systems or adopting responsive design or, you know, pushing back against all this bull crap. They're just like, well, you know, like, what am I supposed to do? You know, my boss says that I need to do this, and, you know, they already talked about it and so I guess I just have to do it. It's like, wow, is that really how you're going through life? Like, is that really the way, like, do you really not care that much that you're just in order to avoid a and I'm not a confrontational person at all, but it's me about either. Like having some sort of respect for like yourself and your craft and really for your colleagues.
User the person who's going to use it.
That's exactly it. So, and again, like as we were saying, it's not that this is oftentimes coming from a really malicious place. It just ends up happening that way, and nobody pushes back on it and tries to solve it in a better way. And so, as a result, we get all these just really awful user experiences, and people are like, "Oh yeah, I hate this." That's one of my favorite things to do in taxis in different cities, and you know, travel a lot for work and stuff. Mm-hmm. I always get into a conversation with the taxi driver, and they say, "Well, what do you do?" And I say, "Well, what kind of phone do you have?" And they're, you know, they'll talk about their iPhone or their Android phone, and I said, "Do you ever go on the internet on that phone?" They're like, "Yeah, of course." And I said, "What's the thing that frustrates you the most about that experience?" And then there's always just some amazing 15-minute long story about all their gripes with the web experienced on a taxi driver's phone. And I'm like, okay, so my job is to prevent that stuff from happening.
That's a beautiful story.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, you get so many things, and like, of course, the heavy hitters, the common threads are, it's so slow, you know, it's so slow, or oh, I hate it whenever I tap this, or it's teeny tiny, or I have to pinch in, or whatever, or you know, my daughter is trying to call me or look this thing up, and it's just, you get these really amazing anecdotes that very much influences like what we should be focusing on as a discipline.
I'm glad you exist.
And you as well.
I love that you ask people that. Right. I love that you ask people that in every city. That's a great idea.
It's a lot of fun. I definitely don't like the whole, what's amazing. And this is, you know, because mobile is such a big part of our life. I mean, we're carrying this thing with us all the time. You just end up with these really, you know, people are passionate about their mobile experience because that's literally what we're doing all day, every day, is interacting with things on our phone. And I think it's like, it's just a really cool way to sort of learn about someone and what they care about, what they don't care about and stuff.
How bad do you feel about the anger that's on the internet and that we help it get, help people express it more quickly? That our work makes it easier for some people to express rage.
Yeah, it's man, I'm really struggling right now. We're gonna have some good stuff coming up soon that I was trying to hopefully how I think in my own head how I'm sort of addressing some of that stuff. I have some like project ideas and things that I'm chipping away at, but yeah. So more to come. It's a little early days to talk about it now, but like, it's tough, man. Like cause what's the phrase where it's like technology is not neutral, but it's not neutral or something like that. It's like,
well, all software is political.
It's like just making like a text input. And that's pretty, you know, benign, but at the same time, you know, how we use that or how people use that is, I don't know. It's terrifying. Like I've definitely come down. I've, you know, read a lot about stuff like this, and I'm very much an optimist. So I tend to think that the internet is a good thing for us, that, you know, the ability to communicate online will help make the world better
in the long run.
Make progress and stuff. But yeah, it's in a lot of ways, it's like dropping a supercomputer onto a bunch of Neanderthals or something. Where, well, it's like, oh hey, a text field. Like,
well, I think it's Futurama, where they described us as a planet of psychotic apes. You know, I mean, sometimes we do lovely spiritual things, and probably every person individually does some wonderful things for people they love, but we're very quick to violence, and we really don't like people who look different from us, and all this primitive stuff is right there. We don't like any shake-up to the power unless it's in our interest, you know, like, anyway. Yeah. But that's another show.
Yeah, no, it totally is, and there's a lot to unpack there, and again, I'm just still trying
to... Oh, you are a consultant now, you said unpack.
Unpack, oh my goodness. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I apologize. You work with Josh.
My jargon is showing.
Yeah. Josh says that, I think, unpack.
We used to keep a whiteboard, like a giant whiteboard that was the entire length of a room that we sat in, where we just filled it up with all of the buzzwords that we encountered just in the marketing advertising world. And there's just so many things that we just encountered on a daily basis, and we would just cringe every time we'd hear them. New ways of, like, F-commerce, like Facebook commerce, like selling things.
Wow.
Just all sorts of stuff. But then, like, what's the just action items and the rest of the corporate sort of stuff. But there's some real good marketing specific ones that used to have a lot of fun with.
I wrote a commercial about it was making fun of fast food restaurants with my partner Jerry Vaglio years ago. And when I was in advertising, we did a commercial for Fuddruckers, and we had an imaginary, the executives at a fast food company talking about beverage leveraging. And basically
beverage leverage.
And all the language came from our account executive team. We basically just, you know, took notes during meetings on things that were said that made it all, you know, that made the nonsense we were discussing sound more like business.
That's amazing.
Right. So.
Influencers. Yeah.
Ooh.
What's the ask? That was something we heard a lot.
What's the ask?
How do you feel about creative being used to refer to as like the artwork for a thing?
Oh, used to refer as the artwork?
You know, like
where, like, it's put, like, the creative over here?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We're waiting for the creative?
I always hated that.
I never heard that.
Really?
I worked in a creative department and we were called creatives. Well, let's see what the creatives have come up with.
Right. Yeah,
the creatives. I actually had a terrible fight with a friend over that word once. I don't even want to think about it right now, but we're all creative. I like the word but I like what it really means. Children are creative, you know, and if you can don't beat it out of them, they'll stay creative.
Right, right.
And I think that we're very lucky to live in a field where we have to be creative every day, and everybody on our team, right? The client has to be creative. Everybody has to be creative. The yep. person trying to reinvent their product, the person trying to understand what their customers really want, that's creativity and empathy. So,
yep.
Wow, and now I've just used two. I said empathy, so this episode must end.
We've hit the threshold. So.
Yes, we've hit the empathy wall. So I want to thank you, Brad Frost. People can find you by going to bradfrost.com. Or on the Twitters at Brad_Frost.
My middle name.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Okay. See, that's an easy way to remember it. If you go to bradfrost.com, your projects are listed there. Where do you keep your work portfolio these days?
It hasn't been updated in a long time. This whole book project has...
Oh, yeah.
Sort of consumed me a little
bit.
We
didn't even talk about the book.
Yeah.
Dear Lord.
That's at atomicdesign.bradfrost.com.
So atomicdesign.bradfrost.com.
Yeah.
And if you go there, you can order the book.
And read it.
You can read it there.
Yeah. You could read and order it. I sort of, I basically published it as I went. So put it up there so anyone could read like the latest version of it. And now that it's done, there was like 10% of my brain that was like, oh, I'll take the actual text down now that it's done. So people are forced to buy it, but I think I'm actually going to leave it up there.
I don't think that would be a death to BS thing to do. And I think everybody,
I'm leaving it up.
Yeah. And, yeah, exactly. I knew you would. And, I'm pretty sure, aren't you out of copies already? Aren't you basically sold out of your first print order? Did I read that?
I thought I was going to be sitting on a giant throne of paperback books for the next year, and I was pretty...
Like Super Colon Blow.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly like Super Colon Blow. I'm so glad you said that. That's one of my favorite SNL commercials.
But instead,
but yeah, that's what I thought. I thought I was going to be sitting on a giant pyramid of books, and just bizarrely, and I'm like over the moon, but also a little terrified that
because you have a really strong idea, and people love it, and they need it, and it helps people work, and because you're a great person, and people love you.
Well, thank you. I'm just awkward with compliments, but I appreciate. Thank you. But yeah, no, it's been great. So I still have yet to get the book. So I'm getting them on Monday and shipping them out. So, but I ordered a new batch already. So
that's fantastic.
Out.
Well, congratulations on the success. We will not wait 10 years to have you back on the show. And have a great night.
You as well.
And we'll talk again soon. I'll see you soon.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. For sure. All right. And happy holidays in the meantime.
To you as well, and to all our listeners. Thank you.
Jake Bells. All right. Thank you.